Hello, welcome to Talking Europe. The Green Deal is often seen as the flagship project of the previous EU mandate. After last year's European elections and a strong showing by right-wing parties, the Green Deal was rebranded as the Clean Industrial Deal. There's now more emphasis on industrial revival and competitiveness. MEPs and members of the European Commission say the EU shouldn't have to choose between re-industrialisation and meeting climate objectives. Officially, the goal of becoming climate neutral by 2050 remains, but how to strike that balance is a bone of contention between competing political forces in the European Union. Well, to dive into this, I'm joined by two MEPs who work extensively on these issues. Lídia Pereira is a Portuguese MEP from the European People's Party. Welcome to you.
Hello.
And also Thomas Pellerin-Carlin, a French MEP from the Socialists and Democrats. Welcome to you as well. Lídia Pereira, you've said that Europe needs to lead the clean industrial revolution. What do you mean by that?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me for this conversation. It's great to share this opportunity with both of you, but in particular with Thomas. What do I mean by that? Basically, this is the way we can thrive, given the different circumstances and difficult context that we have in the world. We have to be concrete on what we want to achieve in terms of economy, but not lagging behind on the climate ambition. Mm. So we need economic realism. We need to keep, and we have been insisting on this, we want to keep the climate ambition. And we also have to deliver on political courage to achieve that. Mm-hmm. So clean industrial revolution, or the clean industrial deal, is that. It's to make sure that we have competitiveness as one of the driving goals to achieve the climate neutrality. So they are not competing with one another. It is something that we can do. And if I can conclude very quickly, it is also for the independence of Europe that we achieve that.
I'll get your reaction in a second, Thomas. I just want us to take a listen to European Commissioner Stéphane Séjourné talking about those 2050 climate goals.
The objective is quite clear. We have decided to keep the standards we set during the last mandate. The standards are clear. The goal is to decarbonize our economy by 2050. The real difference in this mandate is that we are being pragmatic. It means reducing paperwork, harmonizing rules. And I don't confuse the path with the objective. The objective is fixed to decarbonize the economy.
Thomas Pellerin-Carlin, if the path is not entirely clear, though, towards this 2050 objective, are we going to meet that 2050 target?
So let's zoom out for a second. Yeah. So what are we trying to achieve? We are trying to achieve one of the biggest social, economic and technological revolution in recent European history. Mm. It's something that, in terms of scale, resembles the first or the second industrial revolution. So we're not talking about something that will be decided over the next weeks. We're talking about changes that occur over 10, 20, 25 years. Mm. And so, to me, what is important is to understand what is the final objective. There is total consensus in the European Parliament that that should remain climate neutrality by 2050. And then the question is, how do we get there when it comes to mobility, when it comes to agriculture and food, when it comes to managing and protecting our environment, our forest, and when also it comes to what Lydia just said, how we can be the leaders in the new technologies, batteries, electrolyzers, solar power, wind power. Because let's be clear, if it's not Europe leading the world on that, it's going to be China.
Mm. Lídia Pereira, I guess this whole clean industrial deal is really about delivering something tangible for people, particularly on those people that don't have a lot of money, perhaps, and are suffering from high energy bills, high electricity prices and so forth. That's a key component of all this.
That is, but yeah. We also need to fix the rules at the moment in the internal market in what regards the energy markets, because we still observe huge discrepancies between member states, which obviously lead to a very fragmented market, which then impedes people feeling the massive opportunity that we have with these with the deployment and the scaling up of these technologies. So we really need to, when we are talking about simplification, and there have been a lot of commitment from the Commission as well to address the still existing obstacles in the internal market, especially on energy markets. It is something that of crucial priority. Otherwise, this is not going to be, you know, something that is tangible for people at home.
Yes, so the fragmentation and the sort of incomplete energy union is perhaps stopping consumers feeling these sort of policy benefits, if you will, right?
Yeah, and it's still a work in progress. But let me be clear, the main obstacle to a completely integrated European energy union are specific national governments, especially the Hungarian government and the French government, that have been putting obstacles to the physical interconnection between European countries. Lydia is coming from Portugal. If you want to link Portugal with, say, for instance, Germany, through an electricity network, you need to go through Spain, which is not a problem. You need to go also through France. And national governments in France have been reluctant to do that because they're confusing the short-sighted interests of one specific company with the general interests of the French nation and of the European Union. Yeah. So more than ever, we need not only to talk Europe, but also to act Europe.
And that's exactly the reason why I said at the very my first intervention, political courage. It's really necessary to have political courage from the leadership of Europe to push in this direction. Otherwise, we will always be dependent on third countries for supply the supply of energy. Or so if we don't fix this, we will, in 10 years' time, we will be sitting here again discussing the same.
Yeah, and on that energy independence point, you're both actually working on the same group, a friendship group known as the Clean Tech Friendship Group. And obviously, you're trying to develop these new technologies, aren't you, to make Europe more independent. So maybe just outline a little bit of that.
So ourselves as MEPs, we're not developing the technologies themselves.
Not yet.
But those are being developed by engineers, innovators, researchers, and being deployed in the real world by factory workers, by technicians that are really doing the heavy lifting. Our job as MEPs is to listen to civil society as a whole, including the people that are not well represented. Because today, we have thousands of lobbyists in Brussels that are representing the interests of the incumbents, the big gas company, the big electricity utility. And it's normal that their voices are heard. But what about the companies that are small today, but that are the clean tech giants of the future? And so we want to listen to them. We are visiting on the ground the facilities where the economy of the future is actually being developed in the present. And what is the big challenge is to be forward-looking, to do regulation not for the world of yesterday, but for the world of tomorrow. A lot of the things we discuss here in Parliament will have an impact on people's lives, but not now, not you know, in July, but in 2029, in 2034. And so it is important for us to be in resonance with that future economy that we see emerging.
And if I can, clean technologies are also important for from an independence perspective because it leads to circular economy. And we see that the world is quite turbulent at the moment with this exigency from the US in applying tariffs and the other day not. But this is a disruption for the stability that companies, that businesses need to thrive and to flourish and to compete. So if we manage to have technologies that enable us to keep the raw materials inside of the chain of production, this is something good for the competitiveness of Europe and for the stability of businesses. And I think it is obviously something that cannot be neglected. In the past term, I had the opportunity already to visit a lot of projects in Europe that go in this direction. And I think we should be proud Europeans to say that a big chunk of the know-how produced in the world of clean tech, comes from Europe. So we just need to give the conditions and the ecosystem for those companies to become as Tomas said, giant companies.
I think it was a very interesting point you made about the lobbying by big industrial organizations. And it's not just about giving smaller companies exposure and ability to do what they want to do, but actually to look at the needs of, say, working class people. You've mentioned, for example, the case of a care home assistant who has to travel a lot and wants an electric car, but maybe can't afford it. So that's the kind of thing one has to think about.
Yeah, and that's why I've been pushing for a European social leasing scheme to make light electric cars accessible for the working people in our rural areas. It's quite simple. Today, someone from the working class cannot buy a new car, regardless of whether it's a petrol car or an electric car. It's just too bloody expensive. And so we need to make it affordable. And so a social leasing scheme means that everyday working people, they don't need to find 30,000 euros to buy a new car. They just lease it and they pay a monthly rent of 80 euros to 150 euros. It's a little bit like we created social housing in order to deal with the housing issues. And this is helping a lot. It's not solving the problem, but is helping a lot. The social leasing scheme is the same idea, not applied to housing, but applied to that revolution to make electric cars accessible for everyday working people.
We've run out of time, but thank you so much to both of you for your insights, Lydia Pereira and Thomas Pellerin-Kiarlin. That's all for this episode of Talking Europe about the Clean Industrial Deal. We'll obviously be following all the developments around that in our upcoming programmes here at the European Parliament. Do stay with us here on France 24.